Kia ora koutou, welcome to Caffeine and Aspirin on your Radio Active. Jay Hollows here with you today with the crew. We've got Anton, Saz around doing our social media. Janan, she's just left. So we're very lucky today to be speaking with Russell Campbell, who's written a book on Ivan Montague. Now, Ivan was a filmmaker, producer, screenwriter, critic, and he developed a lot of the film culture within Britain in between World War I and World War II. He was the main founder of the London Film Society in the mid-20s. He worked with Hitchcock. He also worked with Eisenstein. He is quite the man as far as the film scene goes. But he also has something of a dark underbelly, what was considered a dark underbelly at that time, of course. He was a communist and a spy for the Russians as well. He also played table tennis, which I love that left field. Good morning, Russell. How are you today?
Hi, Jay. I'm good.
Excellent. How does a project like this start?
Way back in the 70s, I was in the States, and I did a dissertation about radical documentary in the States at that time, well, in the 30s. And I became aware that the Communist Party was very involved in promoting these radical filmmakers. And when I was looking around for another project more recently, I thought about, what about England? They too had a bit of a radical documentary movement during the 30s. I was particularly interested in that decade, the 30s. And a key figure sort of stood out, this guy, Ivor Montague. And I'd known a little about Montague, but not very much. And then I discovered that he'd actually been a Soviet spy. And I thought, hell, this is bloody interesting. And what's more, MI5 was beginning to release their files. And just at this time, it's about 2011, they released their file on Ivor Montague. And I thought, fuck, this is a great opportunity. Amazing that no one's actually looked into this character before, because he was an aristocrat. He was the son of one of the richest men in Britain, and yet he became a rebel and a communist and a Soviet spy. And what's more, he was an important figure in the cinema. Never mind table tennis. God. So I just, I've been intrigued by the history of the communist movement and how it kind of, supported so many progressive causes and yet screwed up so many others because of the Stalinism, really, the high degree of centralization and, lack of democracy. It sort of was a kind of dictatorial form of political organization, and right. I wanted to examine that, and Montague was a key figure to look at in that respect.
I can imagine there are plenty of ways to define communism. What is it to you, and what do you think it was to Ivan?
Ivor
on the R.
No, I can't define communism, but the it was in Britain and Europe at that period in the 20s and particularly the 30s during the Depression. It was the one movement which was attacking fascism, attacking communism, which was well organized. Well, well organized. It was strongly organized. It had cells, all over the place. I mean, the Labour Party in Britain at that time was feeble. It was actually in power, 1929 through to 1931, when the Depression came took force. And it had no answers. It had no answers to the incredible unemployment and misery that people were going through. And I can well imagine why someone like, Montague would want to join up with an organization that was fighting poverty, it was fighting unemployment, it was fighting fascism.
Did he address a lot of those issues with the films that they were screening through the society?
Not really. No, the Film Society was a pretty bourgeois organisation. You had to have a fair bit of money to actually pay for the subscription. It was not a working class thing. That was different. And he was accused. He was accused by sort of red baiters of trying to sort of spread, you know, left-wing propaganda through his films. And he did. He was able to bring in some Soviet features, like Eisenstein's Battleship Potemkin,
right,
and Potemkin's Mother. These were would not have been shown in Britain if it had not been for Ivan Montague. They were banned. He managed to get them shown through the Film Society because it sort of evaded censorship. But he fought very hard to get these revolutionary Soviet films shown in Britain one way or another. Yeah.
And how were they received?
Terrifically. Yeah. They made a tremendous impact. Yeah.
Because it's a key moment in cinema history, the stuff that was coming out of the Soviet. You'll have to forgive me. I mean, I did a film 101 paper at university, and obviously we saw Potemkin, an extraordinary film. He moved on then, of course, to do the big time Hollywood with Hitchcock.
Well, he would not Hollywood with Hitchcock. He worked in Britain in the British film industry with Hitchcock.
Yeah.
But he went to Hollywood with Eisenstein.
That's right.
And, of course, the Soviet director of Potemkin had got leave of absence from Russia to go and explore what was happening in the capitalist world. Great opportunity, and he wanted to get to Hollywood and see, because Hollywood is, you know, the most technically advanced industry in the world. And he Eisenstein met up with Montague at a conference of independent cinema in Switzerland in 1929, and they decided to join forces because Montague wanted to get to Hollywood too, to sort of explore their method of making films, and particularly now with the transition to sound, what their sound technology was like. Montague had a great interest in technology, and he worked with people like Western Electric to develop sound studios.
Oh, wow.
He was a man of many, many talents, old Ivan. Anyway, so they joined forces, and Eisenstein got a contract with Paramount for himself and for his two Russian collaborators and for Montague and Montague's wife, her name was, to first of all to write scripts, and then the idea was that one of these would be selected and it would go into production. Unfortunately, they wrote scripts, but none of them ever went into production.
No. So did he make money out of his passion, his day-to-day work, or was he relying on the family cash?
He got paid for his work in the film industry, but he did have, he inherited from his father a trust fund, which he could draw on interest from, which enabled him to have a sort of a private income, not the greatest, about twice the average wage sort of thing.
Okay.
But it meant that, you know, if he got fed up with his job, if he, at one time, 1927, he had a disagreement with Hitchcock about a certain shot, and he was editing the film. Hitchcock wanted the shot left in, and Montague thought, no, we can't, no, it's not right. anyway, he didn't want to fight. He just said, I'll drop out and leave you to it. And he became freelance then. But it meant that he had that, that source of income he could rely on.
And how did the spy side of the story come about, working with the Russians?
Well, he was quite reluctant to join the Communist Party. He was quite skeptical for quite a while, but he finally did in 1931. And when he did, he got a job with the Friends of the Soviet Union, which was a Communist International organization. And he became the treasurer. And that led him into doing a whole lot of sort of semi-secret undercover work for the Comintern. Not exactly at this stage, I don't think. Spying or, you know, working for an intelligence organization. But doing things like setting up anti-fascist theatrical events and, a whole variety of stuff. But over the years, he would have come to the attention of the head of Soviet intelligence in Moscow. And in 1940, we know that he was recruited by the GRU, the Soviet Military Intelligence Organization. Not that he had any access really to secret information. You know, he wasn't working in the government. He wasn't working in arms manufacturing. But he was a great networker, and they thought that he could be quite useful in rounding up people sympathetic to the communist cause who would be prepared to pass on information. And I think they were quite correct in that. And he, you know, managed. We only know from a few intercepted cables, which were finally decrypted in the 1960s, that he was working for Soviet military intelligence at this time. The cables which were decrypted are only a small sample of what there exists. And so we don't really know the extent of his activity, but I suspect it didn't last very long. Probably they felt that he could be more used to the communist cause as an open communist, which he was. He was a very prominent propagandist for the communist cause. But he was able to recruit a sort of a disgruntled army officer who was able to pass on quite a bit of useful information about the structure of the English military and the defences and so on. And that, at that time, 1940, the Soviet Union was sort of allied with Nazi Germany, and that sort of information could well have been passed on to the Germans. Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. Do you know if there was any films made about him or any sort of radio documentaries, anything like that?
As far as I know, no, that's not true. There were a couple of sort of extended filmed interviews with him for TV, which I was able to view. But okay. they were just interview things. Radio, possibly. I wasn't able to find any of his radio interviews. But there is a feature film project underway in Britain, I mean under development, called Mr. Ping Pong.
Okay.
Deals with something which I don't deal with at all in my book, which is about his career in promoting table tennis and administering table tennis, and in particular the World Championships in Beijing in 1961.
Naturally, they would take that sort of angle, a soft appeal. I mean, fascinating guy. Over how many years were you researching and writing?
Probably 4 to 5. Yeah.
And you travelled to do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you find the archives? I imagine you went across to Europe, not just England.
I did go to the Berlin Film Archive to see a film which was not available in Britain, but otherwise, no, I just worked in England. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Terrific organisation, the Labour History Archive in Manchester. They were fantastic. And then that was where most of his political papers were kept. And then in London, the British Film Institute has a very good collection. But what was very frustrating about the BFI was they wouldn't let you photograph anything, so I had to write out and type out everything. Oh my God. Yeah.
So the book is called Codename Intelligentsia. It's the life of Ivor Montague, filmmaker, communist, and spy. And it's out now. Where can people pick it up from?
Well, the Vic Books in Coburn has it. I'm hoping Unity is going
to
get it.
I'm sure they do. So what's next for you? You have you got another book in you? Or
I'm writing another book at the moment, which is something rather different. It's literary criticism.
Okay.
It's a study. You know Georges Simenon, the author of the Maigret detective novels?
Okay, yeah.
So I'm doing a
Wow.
A study of his fiction as a sort of expression of the patriarchal imagination.
I love that line. Yeah, that's great. Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot, Russell. We really appreciate you coming in today.
Well, thanks, James.
And I invite all our listeners to check out your book.
Thank you.